Hello, everybody. Cal Banyan back with the next episode of what? This is Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. with Celeste Hackett. If you're watching this any other place besides calbanyan.com, you'll probably eventually want to go there, because right down at the bottom of the screen, that's where we'll have links and any additional comments to clarify anything that goes on. It's really the resources for everything we talk about will be down there. And so let me turn it over to Celeste. Celeste, what's going on with you this week?
Well, I still got all these clients, Cal. I'm still working really hard. I got my head down in what I call sometimes the hypno hole, you know, just doing sessions, just a lot of them, and getting ready for my first class, which will start on September the 7th here in Dallas, Texas. I'll be teaching people to be hypnotists, and not just any old kind of hypnotist, but five path hypnotists. And I'll also be teaching them how to teach seventh path to their clients and do seventh path classes. So it's really an exciting time here in Dallas.
That's wonderful. I have complete faith in your ability to get out there and teach our NGH approved certification course. And I've got the NGH convention going on right now, and I'm teaching a class on advanced techniques for weight loss. I'm down 35 pounds since World Hypnotism Day, and I'm also going to be teaching a short workshop on how to go full time, and I talk about the STAR model. If you guys, the viewers, want to get an idea what that's about, go to hypnosiscenter.com/STAR, and there's an outline there about what you can do to go full time. Hey Celeste, you got all these clients. Where are all your clients coming from? You know, give us the short thumbnail sketch here
of where they're coming from. Okay,
how come you got so many clients? You're
so busy.
Many
Yeah, I've just been flooded. And you know, the funny thing is I always, well, last year I had almost no clients for at least 2 weeks in August, and I was expecting to be able to take a little break in August, but instead it's just been the exact opposite. I'm getting referrals from other clients from last year. My referrals are starting to roll in. I get a whole lot of clients from my little paid advertisement that I have on the hypnosiscenter.com. I have a website, probably my blog is maybe starting to pay off at familyfirsthypnosis@ourhypnospace.com. Most people say they found me on the internet and either they went to my website or they went to firsthypnosiscenter.com and then clicked on the link to my website from there. I don't, I have an ad in the phone book. I probably have gotten two people from that ad in the 20 months that I've had it. So it's not, they're not coming from there for sure, but mostly from the internet.
Beautiful. Hey, we're going to have to do a hypnosis, etc., just on how to get clients. Let's plan that for the future episode. How does that sound?
I think that's a great idea. That's what people want to know how to do. They need clients so they can stay in business.
That's right. You could be the very best trained, best skilled hypnotist in the world, and if people don't know about you, you're not going to do nobody no good, no how. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Well, Cal, you know, the last time we did this, we were I blindsided you with a doozy of a question. You ready to just kind of roll and get into that question so we can finish up for poor Helen in Ireland, who's probably sitting on the edge of her seat wondering what the rest of the answer is?
Okay, let me see if I can recap what we've can you recap what I've talked about already?
Well, first of all, you talked about being really careful about the terminology that you use. If you're a hypnotist in the United States and you don't have any psychology training, you really want to know what the psychology words are and what words you can use and which ones to stay away from. Because a lot of psychology words have kind of leaked into everyday language, like the word depression or anxiety. And as hypnotists, if you're not a trained counselor or therapist or doctor, I guess doctor, I'm not sure, Cal, correct me if I'm wrong, you're not supposed to be using that kind of language. But Helen's in Ireland and the rules might be different there, but since she talked a lot about things, psychological words, she used social phobia, general anxiety, claustrophobia. We just wanted to make sure that you really know not to use words like that unless you're a trained psychologist. Have I got that right, Cal, that part right?
You are so right on, and I know that you practicing hypnotism in Texas, it's a particular environment where you really have to be careful about what you're saying and the wording and that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that's right. We're one of the caution states, and so we really have to be careful. And instead of saying anxiety, we can say fear or apprehension. Instead of saying depression, we say habitual sadness. And so, you know, clients know what you're talking. You don't have to use those psychological words, and everybody can still communicate. It just works out fine.
Beautiful. All right. Well, I feel, is there anything else I said last week that's...
Yeah, well, the issue with Helen's client was that she had counted from 1 to 5. She was bringing, her client was in hypnosis. She said, in a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 5. And with every number, there's a feeling inside of you that you just don't like. It's going to come up inside of you as big and as powerful as it's ever been. And so she starts counting. And she was going to use that to regress. She was going to do an affect bridge and regress back to a time when this client experienced this problem so that she could trace it back to the ISE eventually. Well, what happened was the client abreacted so big that being relatively new at 5-Path, Helen thought that she had just dropped into revivification. And Cal, you basically said, no, she wasn't in revivification. She was just abreacting. True or false? Did I get that right, Cal?
You are right on. Yeah. So, yeah, that what the error was, and like I said last time, it's not a big error. It just slows down the process, so she couldn't be as efficient as she could have been if she'd caught what was going on. So let me clear up a word here. Revivification, that means to relive. And someone who's in somnambulism can be suggested that they relive an event that they had experienced in their life. And so this is a real powerful technique to get at the cause of problems, like feeling too angry or too sad or too fearful. We're going to follow it. We bring up the feeling. We follow it back, like I said in the last episode, and until we find the beginning. Well, she didn't even get near that. That's what she's going to do in future sessions with this client. But what happened was she thought that her client was in revivification. She wasn't. What she did is she told the client to let that feeling come up as strong, as powerful as it's ever been, which is not all that uncommon of a phrase. I've used that many times. And then what I would have done differently, I think, and what Helen and I, you can do if that ever happens to you again, is as soon as that emotion comes up strong and powerful enough to do the regression, instantly trigger the regression then. I might say, in a moment of account for 1 to 5, I want that feeling to come up as strong, as powerful as it ever been, just like you did. And then go 1, 2, that feeling's coming up strong and powerful. And I see that feeling coming up strong and powerful. I might not even get to 5. I might say, good, there it is. As I count from 5 back to 1, let's go back to an earlier time you felt that way. And so that's probably a little insider tip trick technique that I'd use there, is that just because you said you'd go to 5, in some cases that emotion's so strong and you have any inkling at all that she might shut it down, then just right there, I don't care if you're on number 2 or 3 or 4, say, good, there it is. Now as I count from 5 back to 1, you go back to an earlier time you've been that way, and then just follow that feeling back before she gets a chance to shut it down or she goes into a full-blown expression of the emotion. And there's nothing wrong with a full-blown expression of the emotion, except that we kind of want them to have that experience in the revivification. It's so much more useful. Good. So now, how are we doing on that question there, Celeste?
Yeah, I think you pretty much answered it, because the last part, she just wanted to know if there was a way of, she used the word calibrating, how much the feeling is brought up so the client is in touch enough, but she doesn't become so distressed. But if, you know, from what I understand you saying, Cal, just get the emotion and go back and have her relive the event. Tell me something, just because this is sort of my own follow-up question, just kind of curious. Is she going to have, do you think, since the client got scared last time and sucked that feeling back, do you think she'll have problems getting the client to feel the feeling again? And if, is there any way she can stack the deck on her side that she, the client will be able to bring up the feeling again?
Okay, so now you turned it into a two-part question. I think I can handle it, though. Sometimes you guys will see me look down like this, and what I'm doing is I'm looking down at the phone, how I know what's going on. And on a real TV set, they've got those earpieces, and what I'm doing is I'm listening to Celeste over a speakerphone, and that's why it's just natural for me to look down at where her voice is coming from. So there's two different things. One, I remember this question very well, and Helen was kind of wondering, was there like a way to bring the emotion up in a more gentle, calibrated kind of way so that the client doesn't shut down on the emotion? And I'd say I wouldn't even worry about that. I would just say when the emotion comes up, as soon as it's strong enough, as long as it's good, solid, they're connected to it, then do the affect bridge. And I can already hear the questions coming in the emails. Well, how do you know it's good and strong? You should be able to observe a physiological response. When you're doing that counting up, you say, in a moment, I count from 1 to 5. When I get to 5, that feeling will be strong and powerful within you. That feeling, that has everything to do with, and whatever reason they came in for, like that fear of spiders or that anxiety you get when you public speak and that kind of thing. What you do is you go, 1, now that feeling is coming up strong and powerful. 2, coming up stronger and stronger. And then you want to, you know, put on your binoculars and just really look at that client. Watch for breathing changes. Watch for changes in the skin color, like their face is turning red, muscle tension. You know, do they look like they're beginning to feel it? And as soon as maybe their breathing changes to where they're breathing faster, or you know, they start to tear up, you follow that up with this. You'd say, yes, I can see you've connected to that feeling because your face is turning red, or your eyes are beginning to water up, or you're breathing more quickly. And so now you know they've connected into that feeling. You might go 1 or 2 more numbers, bring it up a little bit stronger, but if they really start to really abreact, and abreact means to strongly feel the feelings from the past in a way that, from what you know about this client, would cause them to shut down, then instantly trigger the regression. You say, good, you got it. As I count from 1 to 5, let's go back. And then the next part of the question, if I understand right, is do you think you're going to have problems? And in the next session, and kind of like I said in the last episode, is when the client experiences an emotional release like that, what we want to do is realize that in itself can be tremendous. It can be a wonderful chance for them to shift out of their old way of being into the new way, which is whatever they came in for. And so what we do is what Helen did, and that is to say, good, let those feelings out, because and she let them have those feelings out, and then you look at the clock, and boy, how much time do I have left in this session? If you have time for the regression, you can continue with the regression, although, like I said, it would be nice if you could have actually triggered the regression before the emotional release. But if you have time for the regression, go ahead and go for it and say, now I'm going to count from 5 back to 1, and you're going to be at an earlier time you felt that way, and just use it. You don't need a ton of emotion to do affect bridge. For example, the other kinds of bridges that are popularly used are cognitive bridge, which is just regressing on a thought. For example, perhaps a client has a recurring thought, gosh, there's something wrong with me. Gosh, there's something wrong with me. Or, gosh, I wish I hadn't done that. You know, some kind of reoccurring habitual thought. We can regress off of that. And certainly the power of just a thought is nowhere near as powerful as, you know, the emotion associated with a phobia or something like that. So you can still regress off of even just a little bit of emotion. Now, the stronger the emotion, typically the stronger the bridge and the more reliable it is. But what we're going to do is just take them to a recent time that they felt that way. And then when they're in that situation and they're reliving the event, the authentic emotion will be there again for you to do more regression as you go back to the initial sensitizing event, which is commonly called the ISE. By the way, I'm going to give you a bonus for everyone watching this. If you're doing age regression work, there's five important questions that you want to ask at every event. So get a pencil if you haven't been writing anything down. As you take them back, we want to find out what's happening. We want to find out how old they are, what they're thinking in that situation, what they're feeling in that situation, and if that feeling is familiar or new. And as you get into the your age regression training and experience more and more, you'll find out that this is explained in my book, The Secret Language of Feelings, that our emotions come from our perceptions. So if they're in a situation, something is going on, they're going to have thoughts with regard to what's going on. Perhaps the child is being criticized by the parent, and the child thinks, oh, my mother doesn't love me anymore. So there's the thought, and that's going to provoke emotions. For example, it might be sadness because the child now perceives that he or she has lost the affection of their mother. So those things have to make sense, and we want to find out what's happening, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, how old the client is in that event, and if it's familiar or new. And then we'll probably do a whole episode just on finding, locating, and verifying the initial sensitizing event. But one of the main factors in identifying initial sensitizing event is whether the feeling is familiar or new. So those are the five. I'll say them one more time. What's happening? What does it make you think? What does it make you feel? Or what do you think about that? Or how do you feel about that? How old are you? And is it familiar or new? So is there going to be problems with that? If you did the previous session and you wrapped it up in the right way, and here's another thing we can do a whole episode on. I don't see how anyone can run out of things to do in these kinds of programs, especially with a topic as interesting as hypnotherapy. But the segue is more than a newfangled contraption that you can ride around city streets on standing up with two wheels. You'll have to look that up on the internet, the segue. But it is also what a way I explained that what we need to do whenever we do insight work like age regression, that we need to make sense of it. We need to say, okay, you've had this experience. You've had this emotional release, as in the case with Helen's client, where mainly what was done and what was accomplished was for the client to let out those emotions. Or if we actually did the age regression and some insights and changes were experienced by the client, we'll say, now that you've had this happen, you're now going to be able to more powerfully than ever before accept these suggestions for success. And so we talked about, okay, you've done this, so now you're going to be able to accept these suggestions and your outcome will be this. And then we end each session with direct suggestion.
That was a doozy of a question. You handled it like a pro. And that's why we have askcal.ourhypnospace.com, because Cal can answer your difficult questions and he can answer the easy ones too. So whether you're just getting started in hypnosis or you're thinking about being a hypnotist or you've been a hypnotist for a little while and you're starting to learn age regression and forgiveness of others and forgiveness of self and parts mediation therapy, some of these techniques that are advanced, Cal's got answers. And so it's askcal.ourhypnospace.com, and if we can, we'll feature your question on hypnosis, etc. Cal Banyan's hypnosis, etc. Still getting used to the name, Cal.
Now, Celeste, you know, you're more than just, you know, a sidekick here. You're an experienced hypnotherapist. What would you like to add to what I've said here?
Well, again, I just would like to say that, you know, I'm always so humbled by people who just do the work, and I just wanted to praise her and say that's wonderful. Gosh, I really can't think of anything to add. I think you just covered everything. I was really glad that you mentioned the Fabulous Five, because I don't think there's any other hypnosis instructor out there, and this is what makes Five Path so special, that tells you once you regress someone, how you uncover what's going on. And the Fabulous Five comes from you, Cal, in Five Paths. So I'm real glad that you mentioned that.
Well, thank you, Celeste. So what's next? Are we going to wrap this up, or is there another question, or what's going on now?
Do you think we have time for another question? It's an easy one.
Okay.
It's sort of a funny one, in fact. I thought that we needed that after this doozy, right, from Helen. By the way, thanks, Helen, for that question. This is a funny question. I just thought it would be fun to answer because I saw it on a website put to another hypnotist. And then other hypnotists were writing in, answering the way they thought it should be answered. And I can't remember where I saw this question, but it goes like this. If hypnosis is so great, how come all hypnotists are not millionaires?
You know why? Because they don't use what they've got. And you know what? I'm guilty of that. Let me tell you something. One of the things that I did is I got into this profession. I was 295 pounds, something like that. And, you know, I had the tools in my hands to just lose all that weight right away. But then, you know, I lost about 40, 50 pounds. And, gosh, I wasn't the biggest guy in the room anymore. And I was feeling pretty good about myself. And I kind of stayed around that weight for a long, long time until, a few months ago where I decided I was going to go ahead and lose the rest of the weight. And so sometimes we're just comfortable. I'm going to wax a little bit philosophical here, but I tell you, one of the things that I'm really excited about, you know, I think just about every hypnotist in the world has seen this movie, or if they haven't, they should, and it's called The Secret. And I'm big into the whole law of attraction type thing. And And I think about, here's these tools that we have as hypnotists and tools that are available to us, like through the movie The Secret and the teachers there. And how come we're not all rich? You know, if you compare the average guy and gal living in the United States or Europe to everybody who's ever lived throughout all of time previous to 100 years ago, you'd see that, you know what? Most of us are living pretty good. So one of the things is there's just the comfort factor. But after that, you know what? You really can become millionaires. And I've done really well for myself, but I'm a workaholic. I'm learning to work smarter, not harder. But certainly in the 10 years of, or 11 years, when did I start? 1996, full-time. Our business has brought in millions of dollars. And one of the things I'm going to talk about at the NGH convention is how to go full-time, but I'm also going to teach you how to make a lot of money. You can if you want to. And why don't they do it? One is because they're comfortable. Two, maybe they just haven't had sufficient training. Certainly, it's possible to go out there on a weekend seminar, learn a little bit about hypnosis, but not enough to really go full-time and to be professional. And let me tell you something. One of the people I really admire in this business is Dr. Dwight Damon, and he's the president of the National Guild of Hypnotists. And I've had a couple conversations with him, and really one of the most important things that we do right now as a profession is to help as many hypnotists who want to go full-time in the profession and to make a good income. And depending where you live, it's not unreasonable to expect to make, you know, between $75,000 and $150,000 a year if you're really going to take this profession seriously. The other thing is, you know, it's like that television program, The Fear Factor. Guess what, hypnotists? We're just like everybody else, and we need to use the tools that we have available to us to overcome our own fears, our own hang-ups, our own inhibitions to being successful. And, you need to use that self-hypnosis on yourself, or find a qualified hypnotherapist. If you're not out there doing everything you'd like to be doing in this profession, that's what you need to do. And of course, my brand of self-hypnosis is Seven Path Self-Hypnosis, Mind-Body-Spirit Approach. I hope you look into it. Well, you said that was going to be an easy question. Here you got me, talking from my heart and stuff there, Celeste.
I guess it was a little harder actually when we got into it, huh? You know, I just want to add that I think that with the information age, more people are becoming clients for hypnotists, and that wasn't there before too. So the potential is just, it's outstanding in the future. There's no doubt in my mind that if I want to be a millionaire as a hypnotist, I can do it. I know I can. But a lot of women are hypnotists, probably more than men. Wouldn't you say, Cal?
Yes, that's true in all the helping professionals, counseling, psychology. More is probably probably 2/3 are women.
Yeah, and I don't know that women are as a whole as driven towards, you know, numerical financial success. Women are there to help. They're there to support the men that are stars for the most part. You know, I want to make a lot of money and I want my name out there and I want to be very, very successful. I've always been like that. In radio, I was a very competitive female person. But I also, there's a part of me that just wants to help people and just want, I'm fine many days just doing the sessions and getting the job done with whatever the universe sends me. And I think that it is a, you know, when you do this kind of work, you do often sit back and get kind of philosophical about it. It's, in some ways, it seems like as you do the work, you're so close to the divine. And so the closer you get to the divine, there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money, but you don't always tend to think about that. And that's just a couple things I wanted to throw in as just thoughts that came to me as you were talking.
You know, that's right, Celeste. And it's time for us to really think about, gosh, you know, why can't hypnotists go out there and really build this profession by making a lot of money? And I talked to Dr. Damon, the president of the NGH, and I say, you know, one of the things you need to do is start charging more for dues so we can do more to promote this profession and that kind of thing. And he says, well, we got to get more people going full time. So you and me, Celeste, will make that our mission as part of what we're doing here, is to help every hypnotherapist or hypnotist around the world that wants to go full time and to become wealthy in doing that. We'll just make that our mission. How's that sound?
That sounds good. You know, I did it. I started out in my apartment and went full time. I mean, almost immediately. And it can be done. There's plenty of room to go full time in this profession. Not too long ago, somebody told me that there were more lawyers in Chicago than there were professional hypnotists in the world. And so there's plenty of room, and more people are really giving up on some of these healing modalities that just aren't taking them where they want to go, or they just flat out aren't working. They're looking for other ideas. I had a client today that said, I never thought about hypnosis, and then all of a sudden I thought about it. So where did that thought suddenly come from? He didn't even know. It's just becoming more prevalent in our conscious awareness.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, Celeste, I think you got to wrap it up for this episode.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you were keeping track of the time because I forgot to set my timer. I forgot to look at the clock there, Cal. That's just about it. You know, the next time we get together, we're going to talk about this case where this client regressed and went all the way back to the womb when her mother was aborting her. Oh, it's a fascinating case. Cal's going to answer some questions about it next time on Cal Banion's Hypnosis, etc. This is Celeste Hackett. See you later.
This recording is the property of Cal Banion and Cal Banion's Banion Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved for private use only. It may not be duplicated without written permission.